Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at malaria. Malaria is a life-threatening disease caused by parasites transmitted to people through the bites of infected female Anopheles mosquitoes. The World Health Organization says there were an estimated 247 million cases of malaria in 2021, and about 619,000 people lost their lives. Most victims are children under 5 in Africa, and in 2021, they accounted for nearly 80% of all malaria deaths in the WHO African region. Well, the good news is the World Health Organization has approved a second malaria vaccine. It is hoped the new drug will quickly be rolled out in countries across Africa in the coming months. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Well, the current state of malaria is quite at a serious juncture at the moment. If we look at the last two decades, we've seen that a lot of progress had been made. In the early 2000s, when the world came together to say, yes, we need to fight against malaria, we used to have a child die every 30 seconds. Now, a lot of progress has been made. Unfortunately, we're still losing children, up to about 619,000 cases every year. But now a child dies every 1 minute, which is still a lot. So I think a lot of progress has been made in terms of where we've come from, but we've stalled in the last few years. We've stalled for various reasons. You know, the first one is the issue around insecticide resistance. You know, the malaria, the mosquito is continuously evolving and is really creating resistance to the existing tools. So the net, the impregnated net, has been resistance to that. It's been resistance to medication as well. So that's number one. Number two is the issue of the linkages between climate change as well as health and malaria. We've seen in recent years or in recent months, you know, the cyclones in Mozambique, for example. When the cyclone hits, there's a lot of stagnant water. We see that that's a perfect breeding ground for mosquitoes. Cases go up. So that's a second thing. The third thing is around financing. We need financing to be able to, you know, get to the bottom of this and to be able to support the existing work that is happening in terms of innovation and new tools that are coming out. And the fourth one is the issue of insecurity. And we're seeing that a lot on the continent in terms of insecurity, in terms of instability. And obviously that affects the communities. It affects the healthcare infrastructure. And obviously it drives malaria cases up as well. So the intersection between all these things is what we say that there's a perfect storm at the moment. And if we don't come together as the global world, if we don't get our leaders to focus on this, I think the repercussions over the next few years will be devastating for all of us.
There are several tools to fight malaria, as you mentioned some of them. And the WHO just recommended the use of the R21 malaria vaccine developed by Oxford University. What is your reaction to this new vaccine?
Well, we welcome the new vaccine with open arms because that, again, is another tool that we can use to save many, many, many children on the African continent and beyond. The recommendation was done last week, and that's a complement to the RTSS that was also approved last year. With the RTSS, we have basically about 18 million doses, supporting 12 countries. This is not enough. As I said, the vaccine is really to target the under five. So with the new coming of another vaccine, that's really good news to all of us. However, we must also emphasize that vaccine alone will not change everything because we know that the efficacy is not 100% yet. We know the vaccine is only targeting children under the age of five. So we need to continue to use the existing tools, the bed nets, the insecticide residual spraying, the medication that we're using, all this combination of commodities, of tools, will help us in the fight against malaria, will help us drive down the burden, and will help us save the millions and thousands of lives that we need to save to get rid of malaria.
We know that Africa is the region that is malaria endemic, but what can be done when we know that countries like the United States have been able to really win the war against malaria? What is the problem with the African continent?
Well, I think it's a multiple of factors. The first one, fighting malaria is not a one-sector fight. It's a multi-sectoral approach. So as long as we still have the stagnant waters, as long as we still have, you know, breeding sites for mosquitoes, the mosquito will continue to breed. And so, yes, we're fighting it on the medical side in terms of the vector control issues. But again, I think on the multi-sectoral aspect, we need to fight it. That's number one. The second aspect is that the longer we wait, the mosquito is very clever and it keeps on evolving. So as we come up with new tools, it will evolve and try to cause resistance. Come up with new tools, it will continuously evolve. So it's not a static parasite that we say, oh, okay, let's get rid of it. We have one silver bullet, we'll do it. No. So we as it evolves, we're also evolving. But I think what we need to do is to get ahead. And with all the new tools that are coming along in the next couple of years, I'm really hoping that we can get ahead. The third aspect is really around the political will and really making sure that we join hands in terms of partnerships, in terms of public-private sector partnerships, in terms of all well-meaning individuals, the NGOs, the civil society organizations, the communities themselves. We need to join forces if we want to defeat this disease.
When you look at the landscape of tools and innovations, what do you think is the next frontier in terms of new innovation that can help move the needle in the fight against malaria?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few innovations coming up. Obviously, we continuously look at the medication in terms of treatment. But there's a new tool that is coming out that is in the pipeline. Obviously, the vaccines is one of them. But there's the attractive targeted sugar baits, which is really medium, where it attracts the mosquitoes. But at the same time, there's insecticide within that bait that kills off the mosquitoes. There's also what we call monoclonals, which is antibodies that are being developed at the moment. There are things around gene modification of the mosquito as well. So there are various things that are coming up, and that's why we say, you know, we need more funding for the research. We need more funding to get ahead of the mosquito. Without that, the mosquito, as I said, will keep on evolving and we will never be able to catch up. So we thank the scientists, we thank the researchers. More work needs to be done. And as these tools come to the market, we also need to get prepared in terms of countries, really preparing to accept and to use those commodities to drive down malaria.
Why should malaria remain a priority on the global agenda?
Because we've seen the effect that malaria has on our continent. We've seen that a woman has to make a choice between taking her child to hospital to get treated when he or she has fever, vis-a-vis, you know, taking food and putting food on the table for the family to feed. We've seen the devastation in terms of the economic impact and the amount of days lost in terms of productivity. On the continent, annually, we lose $12 billion of productivity. If we can save that, if we can focus on malaria, if we can drive down the burden of malaria, a lot of that funding can be used for other things, can be used to support education, to support roads, to support, you know, poverty eradication. So we feel that malaria is really the entry point, even in terms of strengthening health systems, especially in highly endemic countries. So definitely we cannot give up the fight. Definitely we need to keep on prioritizing for the benefit of our boys and girls and our mothers and fathers and the most vulnerable people on the African continent and beyond.
And finally, how is the RBM partnership championing the fight against malaria?
The RBM partnership, as I said, we believe in partnership. No single entity can do it alone. And as the head of the RBM partnership, I'm really calling on meaningful partnerships in terms of the private sector, in terms of even the non-health sector, really coming together. Let's put our thoughts together. Let's put our efforts together. Let's put funding together and start, you know, moving together. I'm also calling in terms of partnership, we need integration. Integration into our health systems, integration into other systems as well, just to ensure that we're all driving towards a common cause, which is really eliminating and eradicating malaria for good. Is it possible? Definitely it is. But it's really around partnership. It's really around coming together. It's really around convening and making sure that we can keep it high on the agenda.
Dr. Michael Adekunle Charles, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
And that was my conversation with Dr. Michael Adekunle Charles, CEO of the RBM Partnership to End Malaria. It's a global platform for coordinated action against malaria. And they have welcomed WHO's recommendation of the world's second malaria vaccine. As you heard, they have warned that it is not the only solution. And as we mentioned, WHO has approved the second malaria vaccine. It's hoped the new drug will quickly be rolled out in countries across Africa in the coming months. Here is Henry Ridgewell reporting from London.
A new malaria vaccine known as R21 was developed by Britain's Oxford University along with the Serum Institute of India. It is already in use in Ghana and Burkina Faso. The World Health Organization approved the drug Monday, paving the way for its wider rollout.
In areas with seasonal transmission, it reduced symptomatic cases of malaria by 75% in the 12 months following a three-dose series of the vaccine. A fourth dose given a year after the third was shown to maintain protection.
The WHO approved the first ever malaria vaccine in 2021, known as RTSS.
As a malaria researcher, I used to dream of the day when we would have a safe and effective vaccine against malaria. Now, we have two.
The WHO says there is little difference in effectiveness between the two vaccines, but the new R21 vaccine is cheaper to make at around $2 to $4 a dose, with each patient needing four doses, about half the price of RTSS. The new vaccine can also be made in much greater volumes. The Serum Institute of India is already in line to make 100 million doses a year, with plans to double that output. Experts warn that it won't beat malaria on its own and that other preventative measures are needed, including mosquito nets.
So this additional efficacy of the vaccine is in the presence of this really important intervention. The second is something known as chemo prevention, that's providing drugs to children in high-risk areas where malaria is particularly seasonal.
There were an estimated 247 million cases of malaria in 2021, a small increase on the previous year, and 619,000 deaths, mostly children, in sub-Saharan Africa.
We do hope that there's By introducing this new vaccine, we can really make a dent in this and get us back on track to the goals which were set by the WHO to reduce malaria by 90% by 2030.
The WHO also approved a new vaccine Monday against dengue fever, another mosquito-borne disease common in tropical Latin American and Asian countries. The drug, made by the Japanese firm Takeda, was about 84% effective in preventing people from being hospitalised in clinical trials. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. VOA.
Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, comments or greetings. Dial the international code +1 then 202-258-3076. The number again is the international code +1 then 202-258-3076.
This week on Straight Talk Africa. War erupts in the Middle East as Hamas attacks Israel by air, land and sea. Hamas rockets rain down on Israel, spreading death and destruction. Israel fiercely retaliating by declaring war on Hamas and launching an aerial bombardment on Gaza. Where do African countries stand on the war? Join me, Haiti Adams, on the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
Welcome back to Health Chat. If you are just joining us on the show, today we are looking at the global fight against malaria. Now joining us via phone from Washington, D.C. is Professor David Dimert. He's a clinical director of the GW Vaccine Research Unit and professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. Dr. David Dimert, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Listen, there is a new vaccine that was approved by the WHO. It's R21. I wanted first to have your reactions.
I'm pleased that we have a second tool in terms of having vaccines. I think I'm still waiting to see more data to see how long the effectiveness is going to last. One of the issues with the RTSS vaccine has been not only that it's not 100% effective at preventing infection in kids who get it, but that protection drops off pretty rapidly over several years.
Mm-hmm. And not to compare, but when we look at the R21 versus the Mosquirix RTSS vaccine, R21 is at least 70% protection. I think RTSS vaccine is around 50, maybe a little less, a little more. You can clarify that for me, please. But what do you think in terms of these two vaccines that we have? How do they compare, if you will, but what sorts of prevention mechanism are we looking at?
So they both actually work in the same way. They both target the same species of malaria, and they both target the exact same part of the parasite. So they actually work exactly the same. I think the main difference is that the new vaccine, R21, produces higher levels of antibody. And I think that's why, that, as you pointed out, the effectiveness is slightly better with the new R21 vaccine, 70% versus 50%, at least in the first year after follow-up post-vaccination.
Vaccine development takes a long time. We've seen with COVID that it could be accelerated. As someone who is really an expert in the field, what are your thoughts in terms of the number of vaccines that we really need to fight malaria, if that's the way to go? I mean, there are other tools, as we listened to the RBM partnership CEO earlier, who mentioned other tools, that the vaccine alone is not enough. But do we need more vaccines, if you will?
I think the answer to that is yes. I think it's embarrassing how long it's taken to get to this point where we even have two malaria vaccines. I mean, compared to COVID, malaria is much more complicated organism, so it's much more difficult to develop a vaccine, but it's been 50 years since we've been trying. So I think a huge difference between what happened with COVID and malaria is the amount of money that's gone into developing a vaccine for malaria. So it's, you know, it's only a fraction of the money. So that's one issue. But I think there are other vaccines that that are being developed that are needed. And I'll point out just two. One is a vaccine for pregnant women, since we know that malaria in pregnancy is a big issue. And then the second one is vaccines that are being developed to give to all people in a community of all ages to block transmission. Those are called transmission-blocking vaccines. So not only do I think there are other things that are needed in terms of malaria control, we need different types of vaccines, too, that will complement each other.
So, Dr. Diamert, as of today, let's talk now about treatment, right? As of today, what is recommended, what is efficacious to treat malaria? At some point, it was about the artemisinin combination therapy. And then when you go to Africa, which I go often, I still see hydroquinone and chloroquine and other treatments. So what is the malaria treatment protocol today?
So the recommended first-line treatment in practically, or I think all countries in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, is still an artemisinin-based combination therapy. So it's a combination of at least two different medications, one of which is based on artemisinin. And that reason for recommending as first-line a combination containing artemisinin is to try to prevent the development of drug resistance. Unfortunately, old drugs like chloroquine, there's a lot of resistance of the parasite to the drug. So people who get that as a treatment aren't going to be cured. So it really is recommended first-line that an artemisinin-containing combination drug be used.
Malaria can become very severe, to the point of cerebral malaria, and be deadly. It's a very deadly disease. Talk to us about some very basics when we look at symptoms, because there are so many diseases out there that emulate the symptoms of malaria. So what should people look for?
So for cerebral malaria, that mostly affects kids under the age of five and would present with seizures, fatigue, headache, fever, of course, and then progress to coma. So any kind of neurologic symptoms in a child, a young child with fever, should be evaluated for potentially having malaria and cerebral malaria.
Mm-hmm. So if someone has a fever, right, now that we are in a time of COVID, what takes precedent in terms of the treatment? Do we treat the person for COVID first, or do we treat the person for malaria?
Well, there are ways of diagnosing and differentiating between the two, and there's been a lot of investment. I don't think that your previous speaker spoke about this, but one of the tools for trying to control malaria is better diagnosis. And there are rapid tests that are very easy to just with a drop of blood, even from a finger prick, that can be used to diagnose malaria. So adequate diagnosis, I think, is really key in being able to treat people effectively.
Mm-hmm. And then when we have a person who has malaria, and I'm going to ask this question again, if someone has malaria, right, and they mm-hmm. also have COVID, where is the urgency in terms of treatment?
Definitely malaria, especially if it's a young child, because malaria can result in severe disease, as you mentioned, and cerebral malaria and death. Whereas we know that most infections with COVID don't progress to that, particularly in young people. So the priority for me as a clinician, as an infectious disease doctor, would be definitely to treat the malaria.
So when we look at the landscape of tools to fight malaria, whether it's prevention, treatment, there is mosquito, insecticide mosquito, treated bed nets, and other tools. What is the priority now moving forward in terms of research? What do you think should be new research priorities?
Well, I would say that definitely an added investment in vaccines in terms of research, as well as newer drugs, because we do know that even in Africa now that there have been signals that there is resistance to the, developing to the artemisinin drugs for the parasite. So newer drugs and better and newer vaccines would be the priorities I would look at in terms of research.
Mm-hmm. And I asked this question to Dr. Adekunle, who is the CEO of the RBM Partnership, earlier when we spoke. And I wanted your thoughts on this question. The United States is one country that was successful in eradicating malaria. Africa is malaria endemic, and most victims are on the continent of Africa. What is the problem, one of the issues that could be really move the needle in terms of lowering the incidence of malaria in Africa? Is this going to be prevention in terms of vaccine? Are we talking about killing the mosquitoes? Where does the solution lie?
That's a very complex question. I would say. If you look at history, the reason that malaria was eradicated from the United States had really nothing to do with drugs or vaccines. It was economic development and elimination of poverty and draining the swamps, putting screens on doors and windows. So, unfortunately, it really came down to economic development and getting rid of the vector, which is the mosquito, which is very difficult to do in sub-Saharan Africa. But hopefully, over time, economic development will come and increase wealth to the continent of Africa, just like it did in North America.
Yes. So as it is true with some other diseases like neglected tropical diseases, economic development is so linked to certain diseases and their eradication. So I think that's what I am understanding now, what you, as per what you just said.
I would agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So let's talk about your work specifically. I'm just curious as to the sort of vaccines that is being developed at the GW Vaccine Research Unit. Can you tell us a little more about what you do?
Sure. So I previously worked on malaria when I worked at the National Institute of Health. But here at GW in the Vaccine Research Unit, we continue to work on developing new vaccines for neglected tropical diseases, including some parasites, non-malaria parasites such as bilharzia or schistosomiasis and hookworm, which is an intestinal worm. I actually just got back 2 days ago from Uganda, where we are conducting a phase two trial of a vaccine for bilharzia or schistosomiasis. So we are spending a lot of effort in trying to develop vaccines for diseases which don't currently have any vaccine, including neglected tropical diseases.
Mm-hmm. And neglected tropical diseases are these diseases that are neglected, as the word said. I know we are talking about malaria today, but it is an issue that is so present among communities that are low resource, low income, poverty related communities. So, what is the prospect in terms of new solutions? You're developing this vaccine. When should we expect new tools to prevent these diseases? And you talk about money. How is funding? Because they are neglected.
Yes, exactly. There are diseases of poverty, particularly in places outside of the industrialized countries. So funding for development and research is very sparse. So we have been struggling over the past couple of decades to fund research into developing vaccines for the neglected tropical diseases. We've had some success with some government funding, with foundations, that to help us get to where we are to date, but it is taking a lot longer than, as you mentioned, how quickly we got vaccines for COVID. It's taking decades instead of months. And one of the main stumbling blocks and obstacles to that is getting funding to do the clinical trials that are necessary. We're still hopeful, though, and hopefully within the next 10 years we'll have a vaccine for things like schistosomiasis or hookworm.
In light of the development of COVID vaccine and how quickly that happened, and with the two vaccines now that we have with malaria, for you, as someone who works in the field, what are some of the lessons learned?
I think some of the lessons from COVID can be applied to some of the diseases that I work on. Definitely some of the new platforms, such as mRNA technology that was used to develop the first vaccines for COVID, could be transferred to other infections, such as even malaria and the infections that I work on. So that technological advance is something that could definitely be applied to other areas and other infectious diseases. Also, the collaboration, I think, that resulted or was critical in developing vaccines for COVID is something that should be replicated in the search for other vaccines for malaria or other parasitic and tropical infections.
Okay. Professor David Daimert, thank you so much. We appreciate your time. It was great to have you today.
Thank you so much.
And that's all for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guests today, Dr. Michael Adekunle Charles, CEO of the RBM Partnership, and Professor David Daimert. He is with the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou, in Washington, with producer Nicole Peters. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.